Sessionable.
Welcome, everyone, to Sessionable, the first episode of 2017.
Woohoo!
Woo! Yeah. It's just me and Tom today.
Yeah, just the two of us.
We can just seamlessly transition into, like, promos for our sponsor, Dave's Brewery Tours.
Hey! So what's Dave's Brewery Tours, Adrian?
Dave's Brewery Tours do brewery tours.
Oh, cool.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we will.
We'll talk about it later.
Smooth.
We will be talking to Dave's Brewery Tours a couple of times this year. There's some awesome news. It was announced middle of December, I believe, that they were taking over Cinecraft Beer Week.
Yeah, it's very exciting news.
So we'll be talking to them later in this year once they've kind of nutted out more details about Craft Beer Week.
Yeah, I think we'll have a few. I think we'll have Dave on a few times this year.
Next episode is going to be with Dave and Neil regarding the Institute of Beer, which should be fun.
You mean the episode after next?
Episode after this one. I'm going to release it on the day of our live episode.
Ah, oh. Segue.
Yeah. Another segue. Yeah. So, if you guys are in Sydney and you like listening to us and drinking cheap beer, we're going to be doing another live episode on Australia Day at the Royal Albert.
Yeah. Hottest 100 day.
Hottest 100 day. And it's pretty much going to kick off what we hope is going to be a regular monthly live episode at the Albert. With ridiculously good deals. Like, so this time we're going to do four beer tasters for $10, and you get party pies and Lamingtons.
What a bargain.
Yeah.
You know, and anyone who came to our Sydney Craft Beer Week event knows that it's worth it. Like, it was Mick at the Royal Albert is...
A legend.
A legend, obviously.
I mean, he's my boss, so I have to say that. but he is a legend anyway.
He's not my boss anymore, but I still say that.
Yeah.
So... he is a legend, and he basically wants these events to be just as fun as possible and to be really well priced and for you guys to have fun. And I believe we'll be donating half the profits to Pink Boot Society.
Yeah. Half the proceeds are going to go to Pink Boot Society. Yeah, just kind of just
so really, you're not paying $10 for the four tasters, pies and Lamingtons. You're paying $5 for it, and then you're giving $5 to a worthy cause.
Yeah.
How good is that?
So we're going to have some prizes as well on... we're going to have a sweeps on...
Hottest 100 sweeps.
Hottest 100 sweeps. So we'll give everyone a ticket on a beer, and whatever place is highest will win a prize. So we're drinking the Two Birds Taco, which is now in cans, which is pretty exciting. I guess that was like one of the trends that we talked about in 2016, about more beer being in cans.
I think it's only going to increase
in 2017. Really freaking excited about
that.
And taco in cans is tasting pretty fucking good. I mean, it was tasting good anyway in bottles.
I think I prefer it in the can to the bottle, though.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just seems... All the different flavors seem sharper than in the bottle, where I found the bottles of taco to be, well, it's tasty, a bit more muted than when it was in tap. Whereas this feels like taco to me a lot.
So did you feel that the bottle needed like a flavor pod to add to it?
Maybe just put a lime in the top.
Yeah. I don't know. Segway.
So the theme of this episode is going to be kind of looking forward to what we predict as trends for 2017. And already, it's only, January the something, and a trend has emerged. I think we got two examples of it.
Mm.
I think there's a few other worthy things to talk about in it, though. But the first example we'll talk about is CUB's latest...
gimmick?
Yep.
I think that's
this is not a word. This is not a gimmick I'll defend.
I think that's the only word you can use to describe it.
I've actually... the brand of the beer...
Bond Brothers, I think.
Something like that.
Something like that.
And the concept behind this beer is that they've got a special tap system at the pub, which will take a little kind of Nespresso-shaped pod.
And put it in like one of those group head types.
Yeah.
Like an espresso machine.
And inside the pod is flavor syrup, I can only assume.
Yeah.
That will flavor the beer for the customer. So the customer can choose between six flavors, I think, which are like grapefruit, lime, apple, honey.
So kind of like adding a flavor to your Berlinerweisser, but instead of adding it to a good beer, you're adding it to Carlton.
Basically.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I think the best thing about this news is the video that Channel 9 did.
It's so bad.
Which we'll put in the show notes. It is so bad. The reporter has no idea. The Carlton rep has no idea. The bartender is kind of just like, why are you talking to me? I don't really want to talk about this.
I hope some really good memes come out of this.
Oh, mate, like, we've got to make a gif of that. Of the reporter licking his lips at the end. It's so bad.
He has the worst haircut as well. What's with the white streak
and
in his hair?
And the shot of the beer coming up, like, the point of view
coming
into
out
the beer.
Of his mouth.
Like, it's so truly bad. Artistic, to be honest. And the second kind of related thing is in the States, Keurig, who is a instant coffee machine manufacturer, kind of along the lines of Nespresso, where you put in a little pod of coffee, and then it extracts from there and makes your coffee. They're teaming up with AB InBev to produce a DIY home beer machine that uses a similar pod system, where you just put in a pod for the beer you want, and it'll pour your beer.
Yeah.
There's not many details on how it works or anything, but it sounds pretty terrible.
Awful. Yeah. Kind of like Nespresso machines. Like, they're taking a terrible idea and adding it to beer, pretty much.
What could possibly go wrong?
So, I guess, like, we'll see how that trend plays out or doesn't play out.
But I do think it ties into a trend of last year's that I think is going to come into this year, which is flavored beers, right? So, grapefruit IPAs, for example, and other and you know other kind of flavored IPAs, especially, being a bit of a trend that I think, you know, again, a couple of years behind the US on that one, but exploded a bit last year, and I think it's only going to
get
a bit bigger.
I think it's been, I guess, grapefruit sculpin is the thing that kind of kicked it off, and once people started having grapefruit sculpin in Australia, their minds blew, and
a bunch of brewers
started making them, and we'll see how the trend goes. I don't know, like I'm unconvinced about fruited IPAs as opposed to fruity IPAs from hops. I haven't really liked a lot of them. Fruited sours are fucking great.
Oh, sure.
But fruited IPAs, I'm not super convinced.
Fruited sours, though, are a style that have been brewed for centuries.
Yeah, true.
Whereas a fruited IPA is a very uniquely 2000 and 2010s sort of creation.
Yeah. It
really didn't happen
before. I mean, especially since, like, you know, American IPAs are fairly recent.
Yeah, exactly. They're only, like, 20 years
in beer
old,
history,
really.
Yeah.
And they've only taken off in the last 10 years.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I remain unconvinced, but we'll see how it goes.
But even then, like, so we're drinking an American wheat ale with corn, coriander, lime peel.
This is kind of like a really unique one, though. Like, it's not really a fruit IPA. It's not really a wheat beer. It's kind of like a hybrid of everything.
It's like somewhere between a Belgian wheat beer and an American wheat ale.
It's an adjunct wheat ale.
Yeah.
With fruit in it.
It is great, though.
Yeah.
They've
nailed the balance on this beer with everything that's going on. And, yeah, I was smashing heaps of these over the Christmas break just because it was so hot and it's just a beautiful, refreshing beer for the weather.
What else do you see as... Can you see any other trends in 2017?
Coming up in 2017? I'm not sure. Like, I haven't really thought about it heaps. I hope... Like, I think a few of us said that sours were going to become big in 2016, but I think it was still kind of not huge.
Not to the point where I think we expected it to be.
Yeah, and I hope that...
That comes to
pass. Yeah, it becomes more kind of normalized in 2017 as a kind of, you know, most breweries do a sour, or like there would be dedicated sour breweries or whatever.
I think the thing with good sours is they take time and they're risks for breweries to do.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit ambitious to kind of say in 1 year the market will go from thinking sours are a weird thing to them being normal.
I also think that some breweries kind of try to cheat with sours and, you know, release a sour that's not necessarily great, but it's a sour and it'll sell.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that won't last long, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You've seen that with IPAs in Australia. A couple of years ago, every brewer was doing a shit IPA.
Yeah, true.
and that's less true now.
Mm.
The ones who do IPAs, for the most part, do them well. Some don't, but you don't really see those lesser quality IPAs that were just cashing in on that trend, which I think will be the same for sours. If it's not good, it won't last in the market.
And I don't know, like, there might be like a completely wild card trend this year as well. Like,
I mean, there always is, though.
Yeah.
Right? Remember that year where rye IPAs were a huge thing?
Yeah. I mean, they people still make them, I guess, but...
It's not a huge thing, yeah, though. It's,
I did hate that trend because some breweries made, like, really fucking good ones.
Yeah.
And then there were just some fucking rubbish ones as well.
There was a year of the black IPA. Was that 2015? Was the no?
It must have been a while ago. Yeah, it must have been
2014.
That was a while ago. That was
13 or 14 was the year of the black IPA.
I think that was the start of the kind of black IPA thing throughout the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just Australia.
No.
But yeah. Oh, look, I still love black IPAs.
Oh, same. It's one of my favorite styles when it's done well.
Yeah, it's one of those hit and miss things.
Do you think this is maybe the fabled year of craft lager?
I think it's good that better lagers are being made, but I don't think it's going to be a trend necessarily that people are going to move to.
I would not be... I'd be surprised if straight up pale lagers or pilsners became a trend this year. I would not be surprised at all, and this might be one of my predictions for the year, IPLs being more of
maybe.
A thing.
I mean, I'm seeing more and more of them. What I would like to see, kind of to copy a trend from the US, is the thinning out of malt bills, like the kind of cleaner malt bills for pale ales and IPAs. Not necessarily everything, but like especially pale ales and IPAs.
Yeah, just less crystal malt.
Just to kind of let the hop shine, which you know, is what I've loved for a while. But
the problem with that, and I agree with you, like that's towards my taste buds, but that's a harder entryway.
I don't think it is, though. I don't think it is because it's really easy to drink, and yet you get that full flavor at the same time. Whereas crystal heavy IPAs can be hard to drink, like especially in a session.
For a session, sure.
Yeah.
But the thing with those cleaner IPAs, and again, personally, that's my preference. Like I'd much prefer, you know, one of those much cleaner, big hoppy IPAs. But the problem with them is they are not balanced. They are hop forward, and malt backwards. Like that's what they are, and that's why I love them.
Yeah.
But they're not balanced, and they are, if you're not accustomed to the taste of IPA, if you're not accustomed to big, bitter hops, it's harder to drink them, because it's bitter.
I agree, but it's not pleasant. I think the trick is to make beers that are not super bitter, so more late hops, less early hops.
Sure.
So make it really flavor-forward, but not necessarily bitter forward. And I think there are some really good beers out there. Like I mentioned, the Beer Farm IPLs like that, the Shenanigans Winston's like that, one of my favorite beers.
I'd absolutely agree with both of them.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about saying, no crystal malt at all, because that kind of sweetness in malt bill does help certain beers. It does actually make them more palatable to more people, which is not something that we should be necessarily against all the time. And I have heard a lot of feedback from people complaining about certain beers not being malty enough, certain IPAs not being malty enough, which I disagree with, but that is a kind of a taste bud, you know, flavor profile that some people have and prefer.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Like, I think at the same time, malt forward IPAs are way more common than kind of malt neutral or like lighter malt body IPAs.
I don't know if they are anymore, or if, you know,
I think they are. I see more of them more often when I look at tap lists whenever I, you know, go out these days. I see more of the malt forward ones. Speaking of kind of malt light hop heavy beers, what are we drinking right now?
It looks very pale to me.
It's a very pale ale.
It is a very pale ale.
From Nail Brewing.
It is
Company,
Nail Brewing, very pale ale.
From WA.
I'd read more about it, Adrian, but you crumple up the can.
It's a reflex.
Yeah.
Sorry. I've never come across this beer until I saw the cans of it. So I'm not sure if they were brewing it before they started canning their beers.
It seems
which is
familiar.
Very recently, but yeah, it's fucking tasty.
Yeah. 6.5%.
So it's like an XPA,
IPA.
IPA.
6.5 is IPA territory.
It's IPA.
Yeah.
Anything above like 5.5 is probably IPA.
And it is big and fruity, big passion fruit. I get melon, like kind of like the rock melon sort of vibe from it. I think it's all El Dorado hops.
Is it? Okay. I don't know.
That's what I read before you crumpled up the can.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it is clean. It's,
I love it.
You know, it's pretty hazy, color-wise. Nothing like Vermont IPA, no. Which, do you reckon that'll be a trend in Australia?
I don't know. The ones that I've had in Australia haven't really been super impressive compared to the ones I've had from the US. Yeah. So, we'll see, but...
I think Australian brewers are still playing it safe with that style, though.
I don't think this is meant to be Vermont-style IPA. I think it's meant to be just a really good IPA to be enjoyed fresh.
Yep.
And, like, this is a pretty fresh can. It's, like, a few weeks old.
Yeah.
And I'm fucking loving it.
Yeah, it's great.
I wasn't expecting heaps from it. Although I should have because, like, you know, some nail beers I fucking love. Like, the Red Ale is one of my favorite Red Ales in Australia. Absolutely.
The Imperial Brown is
yeah, that's good as well.
Is exquisite.
But yeah, I was just the cans came in and I'm like, oh yeah, nail cans, cool. And then you know, I tried it and I was knocked out of the park.
Yeah, awesome. No, I really like it. So continuing the kind of our trends discussion for the year.
Yes.
Bit of news as well, a bit of current affairs. It was announced, I think, just yesterday that Gab Sydney. Is changing formats. It's not necessarily a voluntary change in format. The previous venue for Gab Sydney, the Australian Technology Park, is closing down, so they're not able to use it this year, so they've had to look for a different venue. There were a couple of options on the table, but pretty much all of them fell through except for Homebush.
Ugh.
So it's out at basically in the big, I think it's in the big dome where the Hall of Industries is at the Easter show, that dome.
Okay.
I believe. I could be wrong on that, but it's out at Homebush.
Yep.
And they're adding a third container bar, but it's
There's going to be 180 beers?
I think it's 160.
Oh, my God.
It might be more than that.
It's like a one-day thing as well.
It's two sessions.
Oh.
So I think I'm going to be going to both this year. I think I might go to Melbourne.
Melbourne and Sydney?
Yeah.
I can't afford Melbourne, but I'll try to go to Sydney. I haven't tried to try all the beers in the last few years anyway. No, neither. But
I wouldn't either. But I found...
Yeah, I'm not sure what the vibe's going to be with a one-day thing.
That's my...
Yeah.
And, you know, credit to the Gabs team, Guy and Steve and JJ and everyone behind it. They're very good at constantly tweaking the event for the better.
Yeah.
It
seems like a challenge.
This seems like a challenge, but...
Because, like, what, Gabs Melbourne's still going to be five sessions, right?
Probably.
Like, over 3 days? Because that's been working for them?
Yeah. Does Gabs Melbourne get the third container bar? I can't remember.
I don't know. That's weird.
Surely it would, though, if Sydney probably. Was.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
But, yeah, it is what it is. It's a shame, you know... There were a couple of other... They basically have nowhere else to hold it, though.
I think being in Olympic Park is going to be a massive barrier. And I'm not sure if it's going to be more people going or less people going. I don't know. It could be more people because people tend to go over there pretty regularly anyway. But
and it's not hard to get to.
It's not.
And I think going back to our discussion of trends, I don't think you really see... what the trends for the year are going to be until the beer list for Gabs is released. That's when the year kind of crystallizes,
I think. It's all going to be dessert beers though, right?
Well, yeah. Right? But last year it was less dessert beers than the year before, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess like there were more sours. Mm-hmm. There were more kind of weird beers, but I don't know. I think it's still going to be pretty dessert beer heavy.
Well, I mean, it's the format though, right? Like especially if there's 160 beers. And there's basically, I doubt that anyone will taste them all, in Sydney at least.
Yeah.
And if they do, they're going to remember probably the first 10, and that's it. So it's kind of not even worth drinking them all.
So what else should we talk about?
So there was a really good article, which ties into what we're talking about.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so pretty sure James wrote it. It just says by Crafty Pint.
Yep.
And it's
kind of like a state of the union for the craft beer in Australia.
A little bit, yeah. So it's kind of a, here we are in, you know, on the bridge between 2016, 2017. This is what we need to look at going forward.
Things coming up, things to worry about, things to kind of,
It is, you it know, does seem confident. Like a, to be honest, it seems like a fairly negative
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. Like, not in a, you know, everything is doomed. But
kind of cautionary.
Yeah. These are the things we need to fix kind of thing, is what it seems like. So the first point that he makes is there are too many brewing companies.
Mm-hmm.
In the first paragraph, he says, you know, right now, let's say that there's 500 breweries in Australia,
yep,
which seems reasonable. When Crafty Pint opened in 2010,
mm-hmm,
there were 100. So it's a pretty big explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the explosion seems, you know, exponential almost.
Yeah, I mean, there were almost 50 breweries that opened up in 2016. There's going to be more than 50 breweries opening up in 2017.
So I'm pretty sure the number was 48 or something.
Yeah, I think it was 48 in 2016.
For 2016. I can't remember where I heard this from, so I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I might have dreamt it. But I heard that New South Wales alone is slated for 60 or 70 breweries.
Yeah, that's crazy. In 2017.
In 2017.
That's insane.
So, you know, it's only growing. It's a bit worrying.
It is a bit worrying because if you think about the number of, like, just going by venues, the number of tap points per venue.
It's already hard. It's already like, squeezed.
You know,
it's
12 to 20. If you have 70 new breweries opening up in 1 year.
But 12 to 20 is only the smallest. It's like 1% of venues have 12 to 20
taps. Yeah. So that's like just the really good craft beer venues, right? So they have to kind of fight for those taps, and then they have to fight for the really small amount of taps at the mainstream venues.
So already craft breweries are being locked out of taps by contracts with the major companies.
And I mean, I guess, like, you know, a lot of the newer breweries are being smart about it and kind of catering for their local crowd, you know, like having a cellar door or whatever.
Yep.
But still, like, 70 brewers.
It
doesn't seem sustainable to me.
I doubt that it is. And I think it hasn't happened much in Australia yet. There haven't been many breweries that have gone out of business in the time that we've been in the industry in Australia.
Yeah.
There's been maybe a handful.
Been a handful, yeah. I mean, and maybe certain ones that we haven't really heard about.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah.
I can think of a few, but not many. You know, there's ones that have been bought, obviously, and changed hands. But in terms of actually not existing anymore, there's only a handful. But the more that open up, the more that'll happen.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's a bubble that'll burst, but there'll be a point where...
I think it'll expand, but then it'll contract.
Yeah, we'll reach saturation.
Yeah.
We'll reach oversaturation, and then the market will correct itself. It'll go back to a more sustainable number.
And I guess, like, that kind of ties into another point that he makes, is that there's not enough real kind of craft beer venues that are going to sustain this market. And I kind of agree with that. Like, I think there's enough right now to satisfy us as craft beer lovers.
Yeah.
But to sustain the growth...
Yeah, but the big solution is to maybe not look at national expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, you know, I maybe look at the model of, you know...
US breweries, US which breweries, are super hyper-local.
Nano breweries that are making, like, you know, a super fresh IPA a week.
Yeah.
And people line up for it.
Because you can service your local market from your cellar door and maybe a few venues around you.
Yeah.
You won't be a mega brewery, you know, but if you can still be a successful business.
I guess, like, one of the breweries that, you know, in New South Wales anyway, is kind of very super localized, and they even, like, closed because they were having a baby, is fucking Black Font.
Sure.
And they, I've been there once and it was fucking packed.
Yeah.
And apparently it's always packed.
I actually love their business model because their business model is, we had excess beer, we want to sell it. Like, he loved home brewing so much, he just kept brewing and
he had too much beer.
He brewed too much to drink. So he's like, well, let's look at getting a license and just selling it a couple of days a week and that'll pay for your hobby.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And it's literally like in his garage and he just sells his awesome beer.
Some of the best beer in Sydney.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Because he doesn't have to worry about everything else.
And it literally, like, barely makes it outside of that venue.
I think I've seen maybe one or two taps outside of his garage.
And it's very rare.
Yeah. Which is awesome. Like, that's a really cool way to do it. And it's a shame that they're closed down for now.
Oh, they'll open
good on them, though. Yeah. Like, but they'll open again. And when they do, it'll be very exciting. And
yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe looked at expanding, but they don't need to.
I think it's a good model.
Yeah, I think it is as well. It's sustainable. That to me seems like a sustainable model, even though it's in the inner west. It is. We just sell the beer we've got, and that's, you know, it's not our main. It's not our business. Like, it is a business, but it's not the main business. It's it seems like a pretty pure passion project brewery, which is admirable, and I do think the way they're doing it is sustainable.
Cool.
Should we take a break?
Yep.
Cool.
Sessionable.
So while we're in our break, why don't we talk about Dave's Brewery Tours?
There is nothing I'd rather do. That wasn't a joke. Really? Let's talk about Dave's Brewery Tours.
Let's talk about Dave's Brewery Tours.
No, I love Dave's Brewery Tours.
No, I love them as well, especially since our co-host, Liam, who's not here today, he works for Dave's Brewery Tours.
He does.
Yeah, aside from being Mr. Craft Beer.
He is Mr. Craft Beer.
He is also
Sydney's very own Mr. Craft Beer.
He also works for Dave's Brewery Tours and is one of the driving forces for Sydney Craft Beer Week in this coming year, which we'll get to in a future episode.
Yep, absolutely. So Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Brewery Tours.
Yep.
We're really grateful to Dave and his team for supporting the podcast.
Yep.
And we'd like to kind of, you know, tell you a bit about Dave's Brewery Tours and sort of recommend that you check them out because it's a great service. And it's just a really cool thing to do around Sydney.
Yeah, I mean, like, the main reason why we work with Dave's, apart from them giving us money, which is awesome, is because it's kind of like it works for both of us if we promote them because it gets more people into beer, and the more people that are into beer, the more people listen to us, and then it just kind of keeps going.
Exactly.
And it just keeps giving.
And the biggest thing, when we actually sat down with Dave to talk about the sponsorship, he was very clear. He's doing it to help grow the industry, which is beneficial for, I think, for all of us.
Everyone.
So we know that the people listening to this, if you live in Sydney or you've been to Sydney, you've probably visited a lot of the breweries that a Dave's tour would take you on. If you haven't, do a tour. But what we would recommend, we know that you might have friends or family who you've been trying to get into beer for a while.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
you've been
thing,
that,
yeah.
that dickhead evangelist friend who brings the six-pack of Imperial Stout to the Christmas party, and everyone's like, "Mate, I'm not drinking that."
Who would bring Imperial Stout to a Christmas party? It's so fucking hot.
I'm just saying.
I won't bring Imperial Stout to a Christmas party.
It was just an example, okay? Yeah, it's not like I've ever done that before.
All right.
And your mates are just like, "Mate, what are you doing?" Great way for you to show them what you're doing, why you love beer, is take them on a brewery tour.
Yeah.
Sessionable.
We're drinking the Stockade Old Money.
Okay.
Which is a 2 years old oak aged Imperial Stout.
So did they actually age it for 2 years? In oak?
Aged in whiskey barrels for over 2 years.
Oh my god. So what I'm smelling out of it is like barrel.
Just so much barrel.
Barrel and alcohol.
And so much alcohol.
So what's the alcohol percentage on this?
Guess.
12.
Higher.
14.
Higher.
16.
That's 15.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It smells amazing, but oh my god, it's just pretty overpowering as well.
It's really good though. It's more subtle than I expected it to be.
So I'm actually surprised that barrel-aged Imperial Stouts isn't more of a trend, given how popular they are in the US, because we seem to follow US trends.
Yeah, but a couple of years afterwards.
Yeah, but like BA Imperial Stouts
have been
trend huge
for
in the US for a while.
Yeah.
It's only recently that good ones have been coming out in Australia. And this is a fucking good one. I like it.
I mean, there's been a few over the years, but it's only the last couple of years that they've been like Ramjet becoming a thing,
like Ramjet Day.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this is
fucking good.
And this actually, a lot of bottle shops sold out of this on the first day they stocked it.
Oh wow,
really?
A lot
of people went in when they said they was it, and it, which hasn't happened for a while.
Yeah, wow. Because I had this Stockade Imperial Stout maybe like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
It was like a not barrel-aged one, but it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And yeah, I kind of didn't really think anything else of it. And I guess this is like the kind of ultimate result of that project.
Yeah. I've loved a lot of the Stockade beers.
Yeah.
The actual beers.
Like, I haven't loved all of them, but some of them, like, they've been doing some pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And the good ones have been really good.
I am not a big fan of their brand.
Yeah. It's not because it's a terrible brand, but it's an inconsistent brand.
I think
I don't get the whole theme of the of the brand.
So I don't necessarily think that. I think that's the thing, that there is no theme to the brand, or if there is, to me it feels like they're trying to do what Garage Project does, and they're not pulling it off.
Not doing it as well. Yeah, I kind of get that. I also think, though, on a more positive note, they are vastly improved over when they first started.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, no doubt.
When they first started, I just wrote them off. I thought they were going to...
But the first beers were, like, shit.
Yeah.
They were bad beers. When Stockade first came out with their lagers, it was... they were aiming for a mainstream lager space. And it showed. And they are infinitely better now. Their beers are so much better. This is really good. As barrel-aged Imperial Stouts go, it's 2 years barrel-aged, so you're kind of in whiskey. So you expect all oak. And when I opened it up, all I could smell was oak. But actually on the palate, it's really well balanced between the beer and the oak and the whiskey. And it comes together really nicely.
I think like a lot of people don't like heaps of oak. I like heaps of oak.
Look, so do I.
So if you don't like heaps of oak,
Send your beer to Adrian.
Yeah, send the beer to me, and don't drink it. But it is actually pretty tasty once you get past that nose as well.
The nose is huge. Adrian, when he smelt it, he almost fell over in his chair.
I almost did.
It was a big nose.
Should we do some recommendations? Do you have...
I've got a couple of non-beers.
Yeah, go for it.
All right.
You go for it.
So my non-beer recommendation is... it's beer related. It's an article on Brews News, actually, Oz Brews News, about the history of the classic VB ad campaign. You know, the one with the song? Hard earned thirst needs a big cold beer. The known fact, the original ad was a big, big thirst needs a big, big beer. And a big, big beer is Gold Top, was the original ad.
Okay.
Same song, the da-da, da-da.
And they just, like, reuse the ad for VB.
Yeah, and I recommend reading the article. We'll put it in the show notes. It's a really interesting article, especially if you are into kind of beer advertising and branding and kind of all that. And it's, Australian beer history, and it's really well written. I think it's an excerpt from a... it's not an excerpt from a book. It's never been published anywhere before, but it was written years ago by one of the people involved in the advertising. So one of the people who came up with the slogan... great article. I really enjoyed reading it. Do you have a non-beer recommendation?
Yeah, so like probably most of our listeners, I recently watched the new Star Wars movie, Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most badass characters from Rogue One was Donnie Yen's character, whose name I can't even remember.
Chirrut.
So I recently watched the Ip Man trilogy Netflix. And it is fucking awesome. Just awesome kind of old school martial arts action with a bit of drama mixed in.
And Donnie Yen.
Yep. Ip Man 1, 2, and 3, all on Netflix at the moment. Okay, beer recommendation, Tom.
Okay, my beer recommendation is I've really been enjoying... I bought a 4-pack of Doctor's Orders Tonic.
Okay.
For home.
Nice, nice.
And I got a bottle of Four Pillars gin, so it's not a purely beer recommendation, but man, it goes so well. It's so good. So for those who don't know, Doc, this is the second time he's brewed it, I think.
Yep.
And the first time was a collaboration with Yeasty Boys and Weedy Brew, Weedy Brewing Corp.
Yep. And it's intended to be a mixer with gin.
Yeah, so it is a tonic. So the idea is that it's a kind of a wit beer. Where the botanicals are designed to go with gin. So juniper, cinchona bark, quinine are all in it. The idea is that you match it with the gin. So you actually pour a gin in it. And I think Doc recommends...
He recommends a fruit-forward gin.
Citrus-forward
gin.
The one he says is Baker's... Sun or something, but Four Pillars works really well. That's what I've got at home, and it's
Stone Pine Orange Blossom Gin. Awesome.
That'd
as
be
well.
Really nice.
We did that at the Albert,
yeah,
and then we ran out of it.
Westwind's
Saber,
yeah, that would go really well, I think.
And he says a 30 ml or like a single nip of
gin,
Citrus Forge gin, or two nips of just dry gin.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah, which, and it goes really well. Yeah,
you'll get really drunk. Oh, if you do two nips of dry gin.
Definitely.
As a throwback to the live episode we did during Sydney Craft Beer Week, the Royal Albert has actually been getting a lot of the Beer Farm IPL kegs in, and I've been smashing so much of that.
Yeah, nice.
It is so good.
It's a really good beer.
I think if it consistently comes into New South Wales for the next year, it might make my top five for next year's Hottest 100, because it's just so easy to drink and so tasty, so hobby. It's like we were saying, like clean body, hop forward beers is a thing.
Yeah.
And that is one of them. It's just so good. So Beer Farm IPL, Beer Farm India Premier League, as it's called.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks to Dave's Brewery Tours for sponsoring.
And don't forget about our Australia Day live episode, which we'll have more details about on this very page for the podcast, in the show notes, and also on our Facebook and Twitter.
Yep. So basically, you will lose money if you don't go.
Exactly.
Because,
it's such a bargain.
You get four beers and food for $10.
And it's
if you don't go, you will literally lose money.
It's a bad business decision not to come.
Yeah.
Yep. Alrighty.
Bye.
Bye.